May 9th, 2017, and this is Insight Out, The Naked Truth, coming to you live from Lupin Lodge in the Santa Cruz Mountains, where clothing is optional.
But the truth is always naked.
I love that. I'm Errol Strider.
And I'm Rochelle Alicia Strider. And we welcome you to our home at Lupin Lodge. We invited you over tonight for some conversation about the human condition with all its eccentricities, sprinkled with laughter, good music, and the many voices of Errol Strider.
Hi, this is Barney. I'm one of the voices. Hello, good evening. It's Lord Umbridge, and I hope to be able to chat with you later this evening. Yeah, close to the, yeah, we'll be having chatting. Yeah, yeah, fingers. Okay. Well, thank you, fellas. I hope that we have time for all of you to be on the program with me. Our show is sponsored by Go Raw Natural Food. We just saw them in Trader Joe's now, didn't you? That's new.
Mm-hmm. Trail mix.
Yeah, trail mix. So you want to check out Go Raw. It's nutritious and delicious. And besides Trader Joe's, there's... Rochelle just sent me a note. I love this. She says, why can't you read it as it is written?
Okay. He's always changing things.
I am. Well, because I remember when I heard that phrase, it is written. And then I expected some profound spiritual word to come through because it is written. And that's one of the things we may possibly.
That's funny.
That's funny.
That you thought that it was going to be some spiritual thing.
Well, as it turns out, by coincidence, that's funny. Is our featured phrase of the week.
No.
Yeah.
That's funny.
That's funny. Okay, now that's funny can mean that's curious, that's weird, strange, unexpected, or even funny.
That's funny.
I was just reading about Michael J. Fox in Art Magazine, who's had Parkinson's disease for 26 years. And who's able to find his involuntary movements quite funny. So next time you have an involuntary movement,
that's
like
funny.
When you pass gas.
Oh, that kind of movement.
Yeah, well, that's it's
funny.
Halfway between a involuntary movement and a bowel movement.
Oh, God. That's funny but embarrassing.
Yeah, well, it is. It's funny. Anyway, but then there's the urge to take things, and especially ourselves, very seriously. That's funny in itself.
That's pretty funny. That's very funny.
Reinhold Niebuhr, profound religious philosopher of the 20th century, says, humor is, in fact, a prelude to faith, and laughter is the beginning of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if that sounds intriguing or like a stretch, you know, well, hang with us here for our conversation, and hopefully we'll find a lot to laugh about and ourselves, and that might just lead us to deepening into our connection with fundamental source or prayer. Get some funny prayers going tonight, huh, girl?
Hope so.
Oh. If you haven't heard Rochelle laugh, well, you've already had a taste of it tonight. But with this subject, just be ready for a large dose of it, because she's really gotten good at it. She has an immediate and abundant trigger for laughter in her life daily.
It's because things are funny.
Me.
You are especially funny.
What's funny is that I am, to you especially, funny. And now a lot of women might not approach it that way with such good cheer, but...
No, they probably wouldn't.
They might get frustrated with my antics or my antibodies, because I've got some very funny antibodies. They just put up a wall. And I don't know. I don't know what pisses them off or why they get so annoyed. But before I let you go, I want to share this photo. And if you go online, you can see this. It's an announcement. And it's a photo of Rochelle smiling with a happy hand under her face. And she says, whether it's losing stuff, making or mess, tripping over things, my husband is a constant source of amusement. And I have a picture next to her where I don't look like I'm enjoying the humor of it at all. With the phrase, that's funny.
Said sarcastically. That's the interesting thing about funny. You can have an exclamation point or a question mark. So, you know, sometimes life hands us the question mark. That's funny. Because it doesn't feel funny at all. It plain hurts. And I read the same article that Errol but talked about Michael J. Fox, and he's lived with Parkinson's for 26 years and can find the funny in it. And I know we can choose the funny. Funny looking, funny acting, funny perception. We are always funny. We may not laugh funny, but as Errol says, if we really knew, we'd be laughing. So let's discover what we need to know and laugh.
In order
because to... that's funny.
Excuse me. Right. In order to get to the we really knew part. So that's, I love that idea that prayer, that laughter is the first step toward prayer, because when you laugh at something, especially yourself, right away you're detaching yourself from it to a certain degree. You're detaching yourself from being caught up in the maelstrom of human activity. So you can start down that path, which is the ultimate detachment, which is abandoning yourself to an embrace that transcends mind.
For me, it's like going, look at me. I'm angsting over this thing. That's ridiculous. I'm so funny. I can angst over nothing. I can angst over things that may never happen. But I decide that they could happen. And because they could happen, I'm angsting, and that's funny. So, yeah, I think that when I can look at myself that way, I find the humor in everything I do most of the time. Because
well,
I think it's funny.
Well, it is funny because we have such a curious relationship to life. I heard a speaker today, and it was so fascinating. Jorgen Ronders, speaking at the Club of Rome, and he is a scientist, he's been following for years the whole changes that are happening, and he's from Norway, did I say? And they found out that, first of all, he started his talk by saying, I'm very depressed, but I'm smiling. I'm depressed, and it's because what I've discovered over these past few years and what I tried to accomplish has all failed. But my wife says, smile. So I love her, so I smile. So one of the things he tried to do, which I thought was fascinating, was to get, they found out that it would cost 250 euros per person per year in Denmark to absolutely squelch the power emissions that's causing so much harm. It would just take care of the problem.
How much?
250 euros per person per year.
That's not even a lot.
Exactly. And you know what? He couldn't get anybody to go for it at all. 4% of the population were willing to do that. And he was struck, as I am struck, by our short-sightedness.
I don't know if it's so short-sighted sometimes. I just think that anything that we do that's different than what we've been doing scares us.
That's funny.
It's true. I mean, we just seem to be frightened about things like that. We just blanch at going, oh, my God, I have to change. Oh, my God, I have to change. I know that one. I feel that way lots of times about change. Do you remember a book or a movie? It was a movie as well as a book with Alec Guinness, where he played this crazy sculptor, and he was dying at the end of the book movie. and he was being wheeled into a hospital run by nuns, and he started laughing. And the nun says to him, you should be praying now, my son. You should be praying, not laughing. And he says, but I am, sister, I am. That was the end of the book. And he was laughing. He laughed into his death.
Well, sure that this is Father O'Malley there. And now that you brought it up there, I do remember that moment. And I love that notion that laughter kind of leads the way and opens the door for prayer. Like if you can imagine a door there and there's a clown standing next to it and he's just laughing and he's pointing at you and he's laughing because the more he looks at you, the more funny he thinks you are. And now, if you stand there and kind of get insulted there and get some resistance, well, the door won't open, the door that's going to take you into prayer. Because if you still think you're the person that's taking himself seriously, because he has reason to be serious about himself because of the self-importance that's attached itself to the self, so it's a double self-importance compounded twice.
That's funny. Self-importance compounded twice.
Oh, sure, and it is that there. But if you want to get into the prayer part now, well, once you pass through the laughter there, you kind of drop in and you wander around in the unknown for a while. Because you're dead, you can't possibly know what's beyond your knowing. And everything you think you know is probably what you've been finding out that's going on up on the surface of your life. But the unknown, oh, boy. You get to that, and once you pass through that, what'd you say there, Rochelle? When we really know, we'll really be laughing there, won't we?
I believe so. There's joy, and the laughter comes out of joy. You know, not pleasure, but joy. And that's a different thing. You know, pleasure is very physical, but joy rises above the physical. Joy is the sense that I can watch myself in pain. I can get joy. I can be in joy. Just even in that state, because I'm so connected to the whole thing that it just morphs away from me.
And Rochelle has a long and complex relationship with morphing. Yeah. We don't talk about it very much in this family, but she has kind of an automatic, involuntary, if I could use that word again, morph reflex. And what that does is it's kind of like quantum, where something's over here, then it's over there. And she'll be like standing over here, and then all of a sudden, pfft, she morphs into her standing over there. And
Are you talking to me like I'm not here?
Well, I was hoping.
That's funny.
I was hoping you were listening, but I didn't want to assume anything. But here's good news for those of us who aren't sure that the time for our departure might just be close at hand, as in the human race as we currently had it. Another speaker they had on this program is a guy by the name of Dennis Meadows, and he and the other fellow, they wrote a book in 1972, The Limit of Growth or something like that. And here they are talking about 40 years, 50 years later, both of them, about what's happened. And it's definitely gotten worse. But here's the good news. One of the things he said was England tried to establish a population 8 times before the one they now have. They just never made it. The humans just never were able to stick to it there.
What do you mean, population?
A group of people who live there on that island, human beings. And
I don't get you.
In other words, civilizations tried to form there, and they never did. They failed, so people were...
What? Where?
England.
They failed? Aren't they living there right now in England?
If I may jump in here, this is Lord
Please, Humbridge. He's so inarticulate.
I've tried to improve on the articulateness of it, but however you have made much progress. But I would, if I may be permitted... You see my idea. All the periods
people.
Of many eons of time, right? And an eon is twice as long as a follicle, unless you have a female follicle, and then
funny.
You have a double eon.
You should not You project that that could be true.
No, it is true. There are barnacles, and they're deeply related and it's devoted to quarks. The two of them are just like hand in hand, barnacles and quarks. But you see, over the centuries and the millennia, people tried to establish themselves on this island of England, and they came and then they went. They just couldn't make it stick. It never took. And finally, like as you pointed out, my dear, we have the people now who have stuck for, several thousand years or whatever it is, 1,000 or 2,000, when they first established themselves, the Saxons and those sorts, those blokes. Until finally, but this is a recent development, so it's very encouraging to be able to know that a society can try itself on 8 times and never make it, and the 9th, voila. As my French friends would say, here they are. And here they are, and it's very funny, actually.
You are very funny, Lord Umbridge. Very funny. Thank you.
Well, thanks for explaining that. I think I see why I was so confused and inarticulate.
I didn't understand it either from him or you.
Well, let's leave it to our listening audience, those who are, in fact, listening to Inside Out, The Naked Truth, where tonight we're looking at what's funny, and that's funny, and
not what's funny, but that's funny.
That's funny. But there's different kinds of humor. But the bottom line is no matter what kind of humor they are, they make us laugh. And the fact is, we love to laugh.
I love to laugh. I love to giggle from my head to my toes. It makes me feel so good. Now I can be silly and I can be serious, but I love to laugh. Oh, every chance I get, till my knees get weak and I fall down to my sides. Hey, and I laugh till I cry and I can't stop, and it's hard to breathe, but the more I laugh, the better I feel. Oh, so good. Now I can be silly and I can be serious, but I love to laugh. Hey, every chance I get, when it's side splitting and rib shaking and tummy tickling and happy making and silly giggling and gut busting, the more I laugh, the better I feel. Oh, 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 oh. I love to laugh. It makes me feel so good. Now I can be silly and I can be serious, but I love to laugh every chance I get. So open up wide and let out some sunshine. Share something happy, making new friends and family. It won't cost a penny. Oh, it's a tickling funny story. Brightens your day and makes you feel so good. From your head down to your toes, and chase the blues away. Oh, 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 oh. Just take a breath and take a breath. Just share a funny story. It'll make you feel so good. Share a funny story. Just a funny story.
That's really funny. That's funny.
There you have it.
That was funny.
Laughter, authentic laughter. Oh, that was Sweet Honey in the Rock.
Oh, wow.
Not laughing, the one singing about the laughing.
Oh, that's great.
What a wonderful group. Mm-hmm. Sweet Honey in the Rock. So what we're talking about is that's funny. That's so funny. Barney, what have you noticed that's funny in seeing some funny things?
Oh, yeah. Hi, this is Barney. There's
you can't help but laugh when you look at these fellas in the neighborhood, because talking about walking around with self-importance, they even got a cologne they put on themselves. It's called self-importance. And they spray it on themselves in the morning. Yeah, that's funny. And they smell like self-importance. And they get very annoyed if you in any way are derogatorily gazing at their lack of self-importance. They don't like that at all. They especially don't like to have it pointed out to them. And so they get very annoyed. And you don't want to be around these fellas. When you're around someone who's taking themselves very seriously, chances are very good.
I can think of somebody right now who sort of in charge of things like that.
Oh, yeah?
Who's very funny.
Very funny. Very funny guys there. You know? So here's the key to, oh, by the way, one of the funniest guys that ever was, and he had the gift of making people really laugh at themselves, and he was a master. And he died recently. It was Don Rickles.
Mm-hmm.
Remember Don?
Yes, I do.
He did the best insulting laughter. You know, you couldn't escape not laughing at yourself with Don Rickles. Go watch him. He was a master. That was funny.
Well, yeah, that's the kind of humor that some people get off on. Ridicule.
Oh, I didn't see him so much as ridicule. I thought I saw him just making fun of people in a very funny way, just by calling attention to their like most extreme, ungood-looking parts.
When Barney was talking about, you know, the self-importance, and people really get really have such an if we don't know how special we are, then we have to spend so much time proving that we are special. And if we only knew how special we were, that we didn't have to prove it, I mean, then we could really find humor in life. I mean, then it would really be funny because we'd know, therefore we'd be laughing. Oh.
But it is a stretch to be able to get from there to here, and that's why, though.
Oh, from here to there.
No wonder it was a stretch.
That's funny.
Now I know why it was such a stretch.
Strider. Oh, you're right.
Don, give us an idea how Las Vegas has changed in 51 years.
Well, you know, in my day, when I first started out, it was a lot of sand and a lot of guys that talked like, hey, Frank, what do you want to do later?
Yeah.
And these guys went to college.
Yeah,
anyway, and they all sat around smelling their guns. And
smelling their guns.
That's smelling their guns. That's it. Anyway, smelling the guys. There was a lot of wise guys, and then you know, everybody was Vito Boom Boom, Charlie Barbadano. You know.
Yeah.
But it was great because if you wanted a cup of coffee today, if you want coffee or eggs, you got to go boom, 4 stamps, 3 vice presidents, 2 secretaries
right.
before you get anything.
Sure.
In those days, doing. Hey, give the kid whatever he wants, and then grab his daughter and twist her arm. But,
I don't know about that last one, but you see what I mean, though? Don Rickles, that was the guy there. He was talking with David Letterman, and that was something. I love that. I love the idea that prayer it just comes right after laughter. I mean, if you laugh like right now, I'm gonna try it. Let's see how it works. Let's try it. See if we can jump from the laughter. Okay, say something funny.
And then one way to keep me from saying something funny is to ask
right,
me
right.
to
I
say
feel,
something funny.
I can feel I'm dropping right into that prayer right now, which you got boom blah, like he said, you know. Georgie Totoni. I knew that guy here. He was in the neighborhood. Georgie Totoni. He used to have pizza on himself all the time. I don't think he ever did anything but eat pizza because it was like on him. He put it in his pocket when he come out.
Oh,
he'd have a slice in his pocket. He'd have it strapped to his hands just in case.
Barney.
What?
That's disgustingly funny.
No. Thank you, Barney. You're welcome here. I'm happy to keep continuing if you'd like to.
Some images I can do without.
That's good with the pizza. So the other perspective that I was dealing with is I've been focusing on, you know, the origins of the universe and out of this nebulous, you know, potential.
Errol is a light reader.
A light reader. What does that mean? Well, that's the thing they were talking about, light.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. I wasn't meaning that, but that's all right.
You know, light didn't actually emerge until shortly after the bang, like 450,000 years afterward. Light actually was emitted. And we think of that in terms of 13.5 billion. It's a little peep-squeak of a time. But, you know, most all time is kind of peep-squeaky because time is...
In eternity, it sure is.
Yeah, it just, no matter what it is or how long it lasts, it just isn't going to last all that long.
Not if it seems to end, no.
And yet, what is time actually? I was reading the other day, I don't want to come back to the gaseous systems out there because, you know, they're still...
Gaseous?
Yeah. The gaseous
system. It's like the gaseous system.
The gaseous girls. So I want to come back to
that. Cut me out of giggly
place. Oh, boy. So when you contemplate how this thing is trying to come together and then out of it, these forms come into place and these bodies and these gravitational pull, and then out of that, these star clusters explode and give forth all these 92 elements that comprise everything that we're currently aware of. There's actually seven or eight more, but the last seven is 100. They're very shy. See, they're very shy elements. And I think one was called Shyly, Dopey, Doc, whatever.
See, I laugh at you because you're really silly. I mean, just absurdly silly.
Yeah, but I'm not as silly as you might think because...
No, you're sillier than I might think.
Well, when I picked you as a wife, I looked for someone who could laugh at silly. I knew that otherwise...
Well, you got it. You got what you wished for. I can. And you are. Go ahead, gaseous. Go ahead.
Okay, so we got the gaseous going, and then this formulation, and then these little dust balls form, these little planets, which are little insignificant little pieces of dirt that are so tiny compared to everything else. And then on that, you have life coming forth, and then out of that, you have moving life and limb, and before you know it, you've got a conscious being who has gotten to the point where they're considering what it's all about, that entire dynamic that began with this. It's kind of like a belch, the universe belch. They call it a big bang, but I think it was a big belch.
That's funny. We never thought of it that way before, but we could reframe it.
As long as we're making up our own metaphors for what it's about, would you not say, Professor Schnitzel?
Oh, yeah, I was saying that is a big belch. And a few weeks ago, you may remember, I was saying it was a big thought because it was the gaseous thing. But the more we discover, the more we research, it feels more like a belch because it was like had this thing inside of it that wanted to come out, and it was all this life potential. And then the great universe mouth opened itself up and it belched out all these variegated systems of phenomena that has been taking over much of the universe. The good news is no matter how much of the universe all this belching is taking up, and there is a lot, it still has hardly anything compared to the big belch that is still coming. And that's when the universe will take such satisfaction under what it's been partaking of and enjoying like a meal with itself, with all these phenomena and these conscious beings growing and being able to acknowledge the run, and everyone saying together as they look at their inadequacies and their pretentiousness, and they're all going, oh, that's funny, yeah.
Well, thank you, Professor Schnitzel. You are one clown.
Wow.
So, but again, like these fellows who were with this, it's called the Rome Club, and I guess they're I'm not sure who they are, but they sponsor these speakers. I know that. And, you know, the thing that they're struggling with, and he, like the others, he says, I don't really know what to do, Norwegian guy, but that's where it gets down to it. No one really knows what to do, and he, like others who have been analyzing the thing, said it's, you know, too little too late. But he does highlight what he thinks are the two biggest issues, and of course one is climate change and the other is poverty. And no matter what the other issues are, and he concludes women's rights and this and then politics and economics, until you deal with poverty and climate change, then nothing's going to happen. So where it brought me was to be reminded that, like you said, people resist change. They don't want to change. Change is scary. So the Course in Miracles says strengthening the motivation to change is the first step, and probably the only step you really need to take. So as a result of all this study and immersing myself in this cacophony of these disparate perspectives about the future and the conditionalities that are happening on Earth with regard to the economics and disease and health and government, society, and blah, 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 blah.
Go ahead. What happened to you?
It comes down to the motivation to change has to be strengthened.
Yeah, we don't change until we're nudged.
More than a nudge sometimes.
That's the beginning. You're nudged. You have to feel that you're being pushed. Then you change. There are people who are able to change because their mind is nudged. Their thoughts are nudged. And other people, it gets down to their emotional body. And they get like, oh my God, if I don't change, I'm going to die. That kind of thing.
That's what is so helpful about being able to relax into and savor, and every chance you can, take advantage of it too. And then we'll come back to see what this is going to take. But be happy, okay?
A one, a two, a one, two, three, come on.
How y'all feeling?
Happy.
Tell me how y'all feeling?
Happy.
We about to do this cause we
happy, 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 happy.
Hey, it might seem crazy what I'm about to say. Oh, sunshine, she's here, you're gonna take a break. Hey, out in the lonely, we can go to space. Oh, no, with the air like I don't care, baby, burn.
You know I'm feeling heavy. I'm feeling heavy. You know I'm feeling
heavy.
Yeah.
From the bad news, talking this name. Well, give me all you got and don't hold me. Now I should probably warn you I will be just fine. But I should probably warn you I will be just fine. No offense to you, but don't waste no time.
That was Pentatonix. And they were singing about happy, and they were being happy. So what I'm curious to know is, here you've got this evolutionary phenomena that out of this, like, emptiness and nothing and this huge amount of time and the formulation of all this phenomena, what emerges, among many other things, is funny. Funny happens. Emotional life happens. The capacity to make choice happens. How was all of that ever in this river of potential that was in and amongst all this gaseous chaos? Could you have predicted, if you were standing there and looking at the gaseous chaos?
I don't think I would have been standing there or looking at it, because I didn't come along yet.
Yeah, but there was another universe that, you know, they have multi-universe now, like multiflexes, where you can get a different movie, where you can get a different universe.
I don't think they call flexes, I think they call plexes.
No wonder we couldn't find it. I kept putting it in my GPS system. Where's, get me to the multiflex. But they've got multiverses now, and that's each universe takes a verse of its poem that it's making together. Come on, give me a break here.
Yeah, you're funny.
Okay,
it's the only break you can get is that you're funny.
Oh,
how you've lasted this long.
Yeah, well, it's a good thing, because it's going to only get more interesting and challenging, right?
Well. You mean, I think it's going to get more funny. That's what I think.
It can get more funny. And I think that's the thing we have to be prepared to. That's where we get to steer our boat, because we can take it seriously. And I think the degree we take it seriously is proportionate to the degree that we hold on to it, whatever it is, for dear life. Our self-image, our stuff, our belief systems, our attitudes.
That? What? You experience that. It's true. Otherwise, it's just a theory. I mean, it's true for you, you know, like if you experience it. I walk through the day, and some days I take it seriously. There's like, it's like my serious bone is out. And then on the days, my funny bone is out. And I start laughing at the fact that I took it seriously the day before. And that goes back and forth a lot. And I get caught up in something. It's like I remember when we lived in New York, and we would go to get the subway, you know, and there's several different trains would come in on the same platform. And everybody'd start running, you know, and you find yourself running. And it's not even your train. It's like sometimes I feel like my day, I get caught up in the whatever, the stuff that people get caught up in. And I find myself sort of like running for that train, which isn't my train. And the next day, I remember what I did, and then it's funny.
That's funny.
Yes.
One of the things I have learned from you, Rochelle, that's been really of invaluable help is that if someone is taking it very seriously, that's not a good time to make it into humor.
No, for them.
No, that's not a time to point out this is funny.
No, not at all.
And I've learned that
you
from
you. You can get shot.
You're a master teacher at teaching that one.
I think my, like, right now, I want to take it seriously. Don't you impinge on my seriousness one bit.
I read studied about the amount of time it takes for men versus women to be able to let go of an upset. And women just, it takes longer biologically. Their chemistry and their system says, we ain't letting go of this stuff right away.
Nope, we're not.
We're not letting it go.
No, we're good at that. It makes us funnier.
And so how did evolution come up with that? What was it thinking?
It wasn't thinking. No, it wasn't. If it had thought, it would never have done such a thing to us.
And then it conspired to create this thing that was sexuality. It's like, it's not enough that the infinite split itself all the way up in all these different ways. But then it created this bisexual, in the sense that it's by this male-female, this way of organizing itself after a certain point. I wonder if that was there at the beginning. I wonder if they were standing there thinking,
well, they had to figure out a way to keep this, you know, well, okay, we invented these two things. Now, We wanted them to keep going. We wanted to get more of them.
Well, so which came first, the wanting them to keep growing or inventing those
things? I think wanting them to keep growing, so let's do it this way.
Uh-huh.
Because sex can be done with anybody, and you know, it doesn't have to be for procreation. So it had to be like, if we want to procreate, this is the way we're going to do it.
Well, you know what I heard about one of these other universes of the multi-universes? They don't really have sex when they procreate. Or they use, somehow they use their noses.
You're making this up. I know you are.
I don't really know how it works because they're another universe.
You didn't even read that. That's in your brain right now.
Really?
And your funny brain. People have funny bones. You have a funny brain.
I want to get serious for just a minute. Because,
no.
That's
go
funny.
Ahead. Go ahead.
Well,
get serious.
I pulled out this line from one of my poems, the poem that I wrote that's one of my heavier poems. And it doesn't take much for any of my poems to qualify. But this one was called What Value to Understand, where I was contemplating what for? Why exist? What's the point? And the character who's delving into this comes to a place where he's going hopefully to understand not that I stand as a momentary personalized partition between past and future, but as an enduring presence, which, like a needle, pulls gently from side to side the thread of experience that embroiders the universe. Elephant Revival with Remembering a Beginning.
That was sweet funny.
Now, there's funny that's derisive funny. I'm not sure if it's funny when it's derisive. I know laughter itself can be derisive because it can come from a place of real arrogance, the person laughing because you're looking at this person who is so unlike the quality that I perceive myself to be that they're laughable. That they're even pretending or in any way could compare themselves to the amazing phenomenon that I am, who is the person who so believes that about themselves, that they derisively laugh.
Right. The thing is that we started to talk about joyous.
Oh, right.
Funny. Joyous funny.
Joyous funny.
And to me, joy is this connection. You come into such wonderful union that out of it comes joy, and laughter comes out of that. Watching my granddaughter, our granddaughter, when you do something that makes her laugh, it can be silly, but it can tickle her or whatever, and then she laughs, and it's so, what's the word? It makes you laugh. Her laughter makes you laugh. So there's a joyousness in coming into union with her joy.
That's why the architects, when they were designing the system, said, let's see if we can evolve to where they get to the point where laughter becomes infectious, and then we'll have an infection. Now, we may have to go through some other kinds of infections, which may not be all that comfortable for a lot of folks, but to get to the laughter infection. But at least they'll know what an infection is like, because they will have had infection. But they can get beyond infections with being infectious about laughter. Okay, so here's
you know when you get stoned and you start laughing at just about anything?
Oh, my God.
You know, it's like, it just is like, I love that because you don't need a reason. It's funny. It's just funny. It's like just being becomes funny. And I think that's the secret. When just being becomes funny, life becomes joyous.
I'm reminded we have a very dear close friend who was sucked into a jet engine. Yep. You know, not your everyday, you know, don't do this at home. Yeah, he was sucked into a jet engine, and the only thing that saved him were those brown, heavy-duty leather coats that those guys wore. Well, his job was to assist the pilot. He was the guy, you know, checking the oil, you know, washing the windows, you know, looking under the hood just before they took off. That was his job
right.
On an aircraft carrier, I believe. And while he was doing that, whoops, he was sucked into that jet engine. Now, it's not something that you're really prepared for. My point with all this is that he took him forever to recover, and months, maybe over a year, because I think he got an infection in his shoulder. And he was in bed sharing this room with this other guy, and he said he never laughed so much in his life. They just made each other laugh all the time. And it's funny, you look back at a situation like that and the discomfort of it, and to be able to be blessed with laughter. Laughter is a form of deliverance. You know, it's right up there near orgasm in terms of relief.
That's funny.
Yeah? Is that funny?
Yes, it is. Yeah. It's funny. I like it. I like them all.
Right. As a matter of fact, they had a TV contestant show where people had to decide, okay, they were offered orgasm if they opened this door, or laughter in this door. And they had to make a choice. What they did know is how many orgasms they were going to get and how much laughter they were going to get. That was a chance they had to take when they opened the door. Because, you know, you could have had...
I mean, they're both the same.
Well, not exactly.
Well, in a way, they are. I mean, you know, I think that, it's making love is joyous. And
well, it is joyful. There's no question about the joyfulness of it. But we haven't heard from you, Rabbi Greenberg, about your take on that's funny. That's funny. I remember I was in the Sabbath service. I was like a boy, 12 years old, and the fellow was standing in front of us, and we were standing and praying, and the way he had this took us stuck in such a funny position. It was like it took us his rear end. It made me laugh so much. I was guffawing and laughing and laughing. It was so funny. Couldn't stop laughing. And the head of the Hebrew school, he pointed to me and he says, go wait in my office. And I went there and I waited and I waited and I waited. He didn't say he was coming to the office. He just said, go wait in the office.
That's funny. If you made that up, that was funny.
Well, that's what happened anyway. And so at a certain point, I thought, you know, I think I've waited enough. And I got up and I left the office. But I'll never forget that fellow. He was in the Hebrew school with me. We had private Hebrew lessons. So we were taught by the fellow that did the jokes in Hebrew. But I don't remember any of those jokes. But they were funny. I remember they were. That was funny. Yeah. Dirty jokes in Hebrew.
It's funny the things that make us laugh. You know, like sometimes things make us laugh that wouldn't under ordinary circumstances make us laugh. But in that moment that we're in, it becomes funny. I don't know what that moment is. It's like a sacred moment that we find humor in so many more things than we find in another moment.
Speaking of that, I was watching CNN. When I vacuumed the lounge here at Beautiful Lupin, you got to come out and visit us. It's fabulous, as Rochelle says. Undress and distress. This is your place for it. Anyway, they had
de-stress, not distress.
Yeah, yeah.
De-stress. Distress is the opposite.
Right, right. Don't want to distress.
De-stress. Right.
Yeah, and we'll try and help you sort that out once you get here, but I guess I have to do a little sorting.
That's so funny.
First.
Undress and distress. Some people probably do.
They probably do. But what we find when we allow ourselves to abandon ourselves to just what's so and catch ourselves in the process of being so important and taking it seriously, that's why I think where the prayer comes in. Because when you finally really get into the deep prayer, you feel and sense and recognize your connection with everything else throughout all time. And so it takes a lot of the pressure off this life, having to provide for your, you know, ultimate experience. You're like, no, you can go travel all over as long as you want. The universe was made for you. As a matter of fact, you're stepping into the universe, actually added a piece to the universe that wasn't there before. And so for the universe to remain whole, you're a keeper.
Right. And the opposite is also true. When you leave, everything changes too. It kind of has to move and become different because you're not there anymore. And all of that, if you were watching it, you know, in rapid movement, would be very funny, wouldn't it? You know, when you speed up a movie and everybody's walking really fast and everything, it becomes very funny. Well, I think our time on this planet can be funny, too, because that's if you just speed it up, you realize it's funny.
Well, maybe that's one place we can start this change that we're talking about. Motivation to change is get people to laugh more, get to where they can just sing with glee. I love to laugh.
I love to laugh. Loud and long and clear. I love to laugh. It's getting worse every year. The more I laugh, the more I fill with glee. And the more the glee, the more I'm a merrier me. It's embarrassing. The more I'm a merrier me.
Some people laugh through their noses, sounding something like this. Dreadful. Some people laugh through their teeth, goodness sakes, hissing and fizzing like snakes. Not at all attractive to my way of thinking.
Some laugh too fast. Some only blast.
Ah!
Others, they twitter like birds.
You know, you're as bad as he is.
Then there's a kind what can't make up their mind. When things strike me as funny, I can't hide it inside and squeak, as the squeakers do.
I got to let go with a hoe. And we love to laugh. Loud and long and clear. We love to laugh. So everybody can hear. The more you laugh, the more you fill with glee. The more the glee, the more we're a merry
okay, let's pray.
I am, Errol, I am.
So speaking of prayer.
Who was the guy? I forgot his name.
Oh, that was Ed Wynn and Julie Andrews and Dick Van Dyke.
Dick Van Dyke, that's the name.
From Mary Poppins. And speaking of Poppins, we're going to be popping off here in just a moment. Oh, yes. Well, thanks, Professor. Do you want to say something more? Well, yes, I did want to say one more point about laughing. And that is, when you laugh, it's great if you've got a belly that can kind of jump up and down like a belly jelly. And if you put your hands on your belly and turn it into jelly, and if you're overweight, it's perfect, perfect, because then you have all this belly to make it jelly and to laugh and pop up and down. And everyone will feel better. And if you can imagine, for example, all these of the country speaking and laughing, and then there's all the leaders who are very full of themselves. But imagine them all belly laughing and having the belly jelly laughing and realizing, oh, it's not so serious. I don't really have to be this powerful, controlling person that I am committed and compelled to be, that I think I need to be in order to know who I am. But that's rather funny, I'd say. That's funny.
You are funny, Professor. Lord Umbridge.
Yeah, it is funny. But to be released, to change, to get to the point, you've often said, Rochelle, that, you know, we're just not ready. I was so taken by the fact that these people in this one country would probably do the same here. They just wouldn't change for just such a small amount of money. They could have made this world a difference. And this man said he's depressed. He realized he set off to stop the climate change, to do something about it. And he failed. And he failed in some, sounds like, very valiant attempts to make it accessible, close, I won't say easy, but not that hard, and couldn't get any response. So here we are as this society that's just stuck with itself the way it is.
I think that's just where they are. I mean, I don't think they're really stuck. It's just like a place where we are. Movement is a constant. If something is stuck, something will unstuck it. You know, like my little story about the twig, you know, getting stuck between two rocks.
Just thinking about that twig.
At some point, all the waves and the motion of the water unsticks it.
You know, I think I saw that twig the other day. I was down at the stream.
I bet you did. I bet he recognized you, too.
He winked.
He probably did. Yeah. A winking twig.
Yeah. A winking twig. He's become quite famous. You know that? Mark Twain took him into a bar to show the bartender the winking twig, and he wouldn't wink for the bartender, and Mark Twain was very pissed off, so he wrote Tom Sawyer, and he got it out of his system. He felt a lot better. Speaking of laughter and prayer, Mark Twain, how's that dude for somebody who created such humor and such wonderful mirth?
Yes, Samuel
but
Clemens.
I think laughter says this, gives us some hope. The fact that we can laugh at our predicament and our difficulties really sets the stage for hope. And once you've got hope, you're just a hop, skip, and a jump away from faith. And once you've got that faith, oh, my goodness, love is just, you know, practically within arm's reach.
I would say that you're in it.
There you go.
And therefore, you don't have to reach for
it. You're armed for love. It's like you're held in this embrace. If we could all experience that, just suspend our doubt that that's not true, and invite yourself to feel that embrace. And while you're doing that, we're going to probably need to go soon. It's just about that time. So, again, thank our sponsor, Go Raw. Go to my email, estrider@gmail.com. laughingheart.com. And Insight Out, here we are, and thelaughingheart.org. That having been said, Rochelle, what do we need to remember?
We need to remember that resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more. That's funny.
That's funny.